G'day everyone, this is B. Jermaine, aka The Terrible Australian, and welcome back to episode 7 of my 2018 Myth audio reviews. For this one, I will be reviewing the films You Shall Not Sleep, The Man Who Killed Don Quixote, Birds of Passage, and Arctic. So let's get right to it. First up, of course, is the Spanish horror film You Shall Not Sleep, which is the latest film from Gustavo Hernandez, who was the director behind the original 2010 horror film The Silent House, which, for those who are familiar with that film, that was the horror film that was done entirely in one, well, at least looks seemingly like it was done entirely in one long continuous take for 90 minutes. So, and the plot summary for his latest film, which once again I am reading off the Myth Program Guide, is as follows. For aspiring actress Bianca, the offer of starring in an experimental new play is too good of an offer to refuse. As part of her preparation, she and her fellow actors must stay awake within the disused hospital. These are the sinister beginnings of the latest innovative film from Argentinian director Gustavo Hernandez, a film full of twists and turns within its labyrinth plot. Now, I actually wasn't aware of You Shall Not Sleep prior until reading about it in the Myth Program Guide, which seems to be a lot, seems to happen with a lot of the films I'm seeing at Myth this year. But even more so, because being that I'm a huge horror fan and I usually hear about a lot of horror films coming up, it wasn't even on my radar. I didn't even know this even existed until I saw it in the program. But when I found out that it was directed by the same filmmaker behind the original 2010 version of The Silent House, I was kind of mixed on that film, but I thought, the director in here does have a bit of a, definitely has some talent. I'll keep a lookout for what he's doing next. And when I heard that he was the director behind this film, You Shall Not Sleep, I thought, okay, I'll check it out and see what it's like. And being that it was in the night shift section as well, I wanted to try to see as many films in this section as possible. So definitely was automatically going to be on the viewing list for sure. So now having seen the film, honestly, if you listen to the last episode, I sort of mentioned that after when I sort of reviewed the Polish horror film Tower, A Bright Day, that it was the first of what would be a couple of really bad films I would see at Myth this year. And I didn't mention what the other ones were, but I can state right now that the second really bad film that I saw at Myth was You Shall Not Sleep. And it's weird though, as frustrating and as dull as Tower, A Bright Day was, I think I might have hated You Shall Not Sleep a little bit more. And the reason why that is, at least with Tower, A Bright Day, in terms of comparison, had interesting elements to it, even if I didn't think the movie worked at all, and it had an eeriness to it. You Shall Not Sleep is just, it's just as cliche as a horror film as it comes. Like, it just feels like a type of horror film that would have came out from the Hollywood system during the 2000 era. It was just so badly done. And even though all the cast members do try, and one of them being Spanish actress Belén Ruda. If you don't know who she was the lead in another Spanish horror film that was actually great, The Orphanage, and as well as another one called Julia's Eyes. And she plays kind of the sort of, is the director behind this experimental play that the character of Bianca is starring in. And she, Belén Ruda is definitely one of the high points of the film for me, because she definitely you can tell that she really relishes playing this part. But unfortunately, this movie is just bad. It's just really, really bad. And the problem is that the plot does not make any sense whatsoever. Like, here's the thing. There is an interesting idea at the center of this film about, like, what would happen if someone had to stay awake for at least for 100 hours. Like, what is that going to do to their state of mind and them emotionally? Like, what's going to happen? And the film kind of delves into that a bit, but it just comes off as so silly and just so ridiculous. And the problem is, at the end of the day, is that it resorts to the kind of the laziest kind of filmmaking techniques and tropes that always plague horror films like this, especially ones that go for a supernatural flavor. It's like this film is just, there's no sense of dread, there's no atmosphere, there's no creepiness whatsoever. And the film is just constantly full of ineffective jump scares throughout. And I know some people get sick of jump scares, and I can definitely understand that. But for me, I don't mind them as long as they're done really well. And there can be ones that it can be done really effectively, but none of the ones that are featured in this film worked at all. And I will admit I was slightly tired when I started watching this film, but even then it was like none of the jump scares made me jump at all. I actually just expected a lot of them to happen. And every time I knew one was about to happen, it happened, and I was just did not jolt at all. And it's just let down by a really laughable script that has no sense of logic whatsoever. But the ending itself, the whole third act itself does not make any sense whatsoever. I know I've been saying that a lot throughout this whole film, but seriously, it's even more so, just when the film goes into that third act, it completely unravels, and it just stops making sense after that. Like, literally, I'm trying to make sense of all the stuff that's happening in this film, and I can't even do that. And this film was just so frustrating. It was just bad. This film was just really horrible, and it just felt like, I was kind of like, I figured with Gustavo Hernandez, like, since Silent House, even though I wasn't the biggest fan of that film, at least it was interesting when the use of, he was actually able to kind of have a really creepy vibe through that film, and also using the sort of one shot take to good use. But there's nothing as innovating of like that in this whole film. Like, maybe in some of the storytelling choices that he makes with the film, but even then, none of it just makes any sense whatsoever. It's just a really poorly made, lazy, derivative horror film that just ends up being completely pointless in the end. And I'm going to say this film, like I said, there's a really cool idea at the center of this. And I'm just going to say right now, this film needs to be remade and get a really great filmmaker behind it who knows horror, who can make this idea work, like a James Wan or somebody who can make this idea work, because the potential was there, but it was completely squandered just by the execution. So I really hated You Shall Not Sleep. Yeah, the title, You Shall Not Sleep. Honestly, this movie almost put me to sleep. That's how bad it was. So if I had to give You Shall Not Sleep a rating, it's definitely 1 out of 5. This film was really awful. But not the last movie I would give a 1-star rating to. So you'll find out very soon in a future episode what that next film's going to be. So keep a lookout for that. Now, moving right along to movie number 2, which of course is director Terry Gilliam's long-awaited passion project that's been taken 25 years in the making, The Man Who Killed Don Quixote. And the plot summary for this film is as follows. For years, it was thought to be impossible. Legendary filmmaker and one-time Monty Python member Terry Gilliam had tried and failed to film his version of the classic tale several times over multiple decades, most famously with Johnny Depp in the lead, in a production that some saw as forever cursed. Miraculously, Gilliam's The Man Who Killed Don Quixote has arrived. Adam Driver stars an idealistic filmmaker turned cynical advertising hack who finds himself trapped inside the delusional world of an old shoemaker, played by Gilliam stalwart, I probably butchered that word, forgive me, Jonathan Pryce, who's convinced he's Don Quixote. Their comedic ventures are vintage Gilliam, and the internal struggle between dreams and reality, idealism and cynicism, playing as a fitting analogy for the film's very existence. Now, if you guys out there who are listening to this don't know the whole history behind the making of The Man Who Killed Don Quixote, definitely go read up everything about it, because that would be an entire podcast episode itself, just talking about that whole sort of how long it took this film to get made. So I won't go into that too much, but knowing that this was a film I've been hearing about for over 20 years, I know it's been actually been a passion project of Gillian's. He wanted to make this film back in the 80s, but like when he first came up with the idea, but didn't eventually get around to almost making it the first time until the late 90s with actor Johnny Depp and Jean Rochefort. But that film just completely went belly up. And the whole making of that film was the subject of a great documentary that you should check out called Lost in La Mancha. And throughout the project was abandoned, and pretty much nobody thought the film was going to get made. But then over the years, Gilliam had tried making the film again with different actors like Robert Duvall, John Hurt, Ewan McGregor, Jack O'Connell. And now it's finally arrived in 2018 with Adam Driver and Jonathan Pryce in the lead roles. And the question is, has this passion project that has been talked about for over 20 years, finally worth it? Was it end up being good? Did it end up being entirely a mess? Because with Terry Gilliam, as much as I actually really like the man as a filmmaker, he can be all over the place in terms of his filmography. And also, like, probably since Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, all of his output hasn't been that good. I would say in the past, since Fear and Loathing Las Vegas, probably the only film of his I've liked since that one was The Imaginarium and of Dr. Parnassus, which I think is a very underrated film. But all the other films that he's made since Fear and Loathing haven't been that good at all and been more on the mediocre to messy side. So I was kind of curious, like, how The Man Who Killed Don Quixote was going to turn out, especially hearing about it for so long, following like its trials and tribulations to get made. Like, would the film deliver? And I have to say, at least for me personally, I absolutely loved this film. I had a feeling that it, like, for me personally, I thought it was going to go either one way. Either it was going to be enjoyable or I was going to hate it. But the fact that I loved it as much as I did was a huge surprise even for me. I'm not even going to say it's up there as one of my favorite films of myth this year. And I just loved every single second of it. Now, that doesn't be saying that the film is perfect. It is a flawed film. And when you have a film that's been in the making for so long and is a true blue passion project for its filmmaker, you know it's not going to be 100% perfect, and I can let that slide. And in a way, the film is a bit of a mess, but there's a sincerity to it that just made it all work together. Like, this is a film that does not take itself serious at all, and it's absolutely hilarious. There were so many scenes and moments throughout this film that I just found absolutely funny, and also the dialogue is just hilarious, and I was constantly surprised about where the film was going with its story, because I wasn't exactly sure where it was going to go with its story after hearing about this whole film for decades. But I just had a great time with this. It just felt like a good old-fashioned like comedic adventure film that did remind me a lot of some of Gilliam's best work, in it's unfocused and a little messy, but it's a lot of fun, and I just had a ball with this film from beginning to end. Like, it does have its problems though. Like, yeah, like I said, it is a little unfocused at times and a little messy, and I will say I felt like the female characters in the film, even though both the actresses, include one of them being Olga Kuryenko, did their roles really well, the film didn't really give them much to work with. And I would say that's kind of the weakest aspect to me. And they kind of felt more like in service to the plot than fully fleshed characters. But that being said though, what made the film really work though was the chemistry between Adam Driver and Jonathan Pryce. Like, it's their sort of on-screen chemistry that really makes the film work. And Adam Driver is just absolutely terrific in the film. And so is Jonathan Pryce. They're both fantastic. And they relish the opportunity to play these roles. And what I really like is sort of the very meta aspects of the film. You can definitely tell that in a lot of ways that the film is almost kind of mirrors, especially in the first half, mirrors exactly what happened to this film in real life in terms of how it got made and that. And you can kind of sense that throughout the whole film, that sort of almost, yeah, that very sort of matter of self-aware aspect of it, which I felt kind of really elevated the film in a lot of ways. But at the end of the day, I just found this film just a pure joy. I honestly had a huge smile on my face throughout all of it. I just had a blast with this film. And like I said, I think what the reason why that is just, like I said before, it's the sincerity of it. Like, you can tell this film is a complete piece of utter madness, but there's, like I said, there's a sincerity to it that just, that is very infectious, and you can't help but sort of get caught up in the whole, in joyful madness of it all. And the fact that the film relishes in that just made it work for me as a viewer. Like I said, this is definitely a film that people will either love or hate. It did get a kind of a mixed reaction from people who did see it. Like, I think the guy who sat next to me didn't like the movie at all, because even when the film came up and everyone was applauding at the end, he just stood there and not applauded at all. So this is the kind of film I think will definitely be a mixed bag for people. And it, like I said, it does have problems, and I don't refute those problems at all. But in a lot of ways, those flaws kind of really made the film for me, and actually made me love it and appreciate it more as a whole. Like, it's got to be a film for everyone, but for me, this is probably without a doubt the best film that Gilliam has made since Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. And I would put this up there as probably my top five Gilliam films of all time. This is great vintage of Gilliam that feels this feels like the real Gilliam again. And we haven't seen that for a while. So I had a great time with this film. I can't wait to see it again. Who knows when it's going to be released, especially with the more sort of problems with it it had in distribution. But again, that's a whole episode right there. But if you do get a chance to see The Man Who Killed Don Quixote, definitely go seek it out. It is a wonderful time. It won't be for everyone, but for me personally, I absolutely loved it. So if I had to give The Man Who Killed Don Quixote a rating, I give it 5 stars. I really love this film a lot. And depending on when it's released, it could either be my top 10 this year or maybe next year. So I guess we'll have to wait and see. Now, moving on to the next film, which of course is the Colombian crime drama Birds of Passage, which is the latest film from the director of the Oscar-nominated film Embrace of the Serpent. And the plot summary for this film is as follows. It's the 1970s, and America's burgeoning obsession with marijuana has made Colombian farmers suddenly rich. In the Guajiro Desert, family led by matriarch Ursula rises to prominence. But soon the trappings of wealth and power start a war that threatens to tear them and their ancient traditions apart. Now, one of the main reasons why I was very much intrigued to check Birds of Passage out at MIFF this year was that it was co-directed by the director of a film that I saw about 2-3 years back called Embrace of the Serpent, which was actually one of the nominees for the Best Foreign Language Film Oscar that year. And I thought that was a really terrific film. And when I did my top 10 films list of that year, it didn't make my top 10, but it was one of my honorable mentions for that year. And when I heard that the director of it, Ciro Guerrero, was co-directing a new film that was playing at a MIFF that he co-directed with Christina Gallego, I was like, okay, I'll check this out. I really like Embrace of the Serpent, and I'll check out anything he makes next. And when I sort of read up a bit on Birds of Passage, it definitely had a very intriguing premise, and especially where sort of like set in sort of the deserts of Colombia and sort of that sort of the booming sort of drug trade there. And I thought, okay, I like crime films, especially crime sagas, since this one actually takes over the course of many years. I thought, check it out. And I have to admit, I'm kind of a little mixed on the film, to be honest. I think it's a decent film, but it's not as interesting of a film as Embrace of the Serpent was. And I think the main problem is, like, even though there's a lot of interesting aspects to it, the fact that it sort of takes entirely in this area called the Guajira Desert, and it sort of follows these different tribes of Colombian farmers who live there, and how they sort of became prominent in the drug movement there. For at the end of that, like, there's sort of like all that stuff was really interesting to me, like in terms of at that time and place, like how all this stuff actually happened. But at the end of the day, it just has a very standard, kind of predictable, kind of crime saga plot. Like, you kind of know from beginning to end where this whole film is going to go. If you've seen a film that, any crime film that deals with the drug trade, and you know exactly where this film is going to go. So all the kind of the turns within the story, they're all kind of very predictable. Like, you always got your sort of gang wars, and also kind of, you know, you got members of some of the families who are hotheads and who are pretty much just almost messing everything up, and being careless about what they're doing. Like, all those kind of cliches and characters are kind of all there, which I felt really I didn't think was interesting to me. Like, even though what made the film interesting for me, though, was the setting and the characters themselves, and like what was going, like those were the more interesting aspects of it. It's just the plot itself was least interesting, and just kind of follows all the kind of, you know, kind of cliches that we've seen before in other sort of crime films, especially ones that deal with crime families and the sort of the rise and fall of them. And this film doesn't really sort of give us anything that we haven't seen before, at least in terms of plotting, but it makes up for it in other ways, like I said, with the setting, and also the characters are all really interesting, and all the actors play their roles really well. And the actress who plays the role of Ursula was actually terrific. She was great. She had a great presence about her and an intensity to her. And also it's beautifully shot, has some really wonderful cinematography. The score is great. And yeah, like on a technical level and performance wise, the film is quite stellar, but it's just more on a script level that the movie's not kind of okay. So, which is kind of a disappointment, because If you're one of those people who has seen Embrace of the Serpent, that was a really interesting film in so many ways. But as a follow-up to that, like, I admire Birds of Passage a lot, but I felt like it could have been a lot better overall. But overall, it is a decent watch. I mean, I did find it reasonably engaging, but I kind of wish it sort of did a little bit more with its story to make it sort of stand out more compared to other films that deal with crime families and all that. So if I had to give Birds of Passage a rating, I give it about a 3 out of 5. Alrighty, now moving on to the fourth and final film for this review, which is the survival drama Arctic, starring Mads Mikkelsen. And the plot summary for this film is as follows. After Overgaard, Mads Mikkelsen crashes his plane in the remote corner of the Arctic. He must rely on his finely honed survival skills to keep the fire is burning until help arrives. But when the helicopter that has been sent to rescue him also crashes, leaving a desperately wounded woman as the sole survivor, Overgaard realizes that if he's going to have to save her, he'll have to carry her out of the Icelands himself. Now, I don't know about anyone else, but I love a good survival drama. If any movie that has a character who's put in a situation where they have to get it, where they have to survive in the wild, or go up against nature, or survive any type of elements, I am in. Like, whether it be Castaway, All Is Lost, or even most recently, Adrift. Like, any movie that is like that, I'm definitely in. And sure, Arctic may not be the most original survival drama that you're going to see, but it's still a really well-made one. And what did make this film work for me as a whole is definitely the performance at the center of it from Mads Mikkelsen, who I've been a big fan of for many years. And that this is definitely a truly great performance from him. And I like the fact until before the helicopter pilot sort of plot comes into play in the film, we basically spend a lot of time with him. And it almost did remind me a lot of, this section of the film kind of reminded me a lot of ways of the film All Is Lost, where we were kind of watching this man kind of trying to survive. Like at the very beginning, like we don't see, he's already, like his plane's already crashed and he's already been out in the snow for probably a couple of days, maybe a week or so, maybe more. So we're already put into this situation with him, and we're trying to, and we see how he's going to try to get out of it. And that type of stuff is always interesting and compelling for me. And Arctic kind of delivers on that front. And of course you got Mads Mikkelsen, he gives such a great performance in the film that we as an audience can't help but be gripped by the character and also go and be compelled by his journey throughout the film. Like, is he going to survive? Is he going to be lost there forever? Like, we're not exactly sure, but from beginning to end, Mads Mikkelsen's performance definitely keeps your interest throughout. And it's beautifully shot. It has a great score, and co-writer director Joe Penner did a really good job film directing wise. This film is really well made, and also there's some pretty tense sequences in there as well, especially one sequence that involves a polar bear, which I thought was pretty well done and actually intense. And yeah, I really dug the film a lot. Like I said, at the end of the day though, it's a pretty solid survival drama, but that being said, it's not the most original one that you're going to see. And I think in that regard, I wish the script did have a little bit more work done with it, so it could, so that it could stand on its own compared to other survival films. Because when you kind of watch this film, you kind of do know what to expect in terms of what the structure of the story is going to be. And also, you know, like a lot of survival films, there are quite a few contrivances as well that kind of push the story forward that, like I said, are pretty predictable. But overall, it's a really solid film. I really dug it overall. I read a few people say that it was a bit boring, but I found it pretty engaging throughout. And I think that was mainly to do more with Mads Mikkelsen's performance. I mean, the film itself is pretty good, but I think it probably wouldn't be as engaging for me if it wasn't for Mads Mikkelsen's performance, which I believe really elevated the film a lot. So yeah, I really dug Arctic overall. It's a solid little survival drama. Not the best one that you'll ever see. And, you know, it's not one that you'll probably remember a few years down the road. But it's still a really solid and engaging one nonetheless. That, like I said, has a great performance by Mads Mikkelsen in it. So if I had to give this film a rating, I'd give it a solid 3.5 out of 5. Well, that's it. That's the end of this 7th episode of my 2018 Myth audio reviews. I hope you guys all enjoyed it. And keep a lookout very soon for episode 8, in which I'll be reviewing the films Tyrell, Knife and Heart, Beast, and The Tale. So keep a lookout for that, and I'll see you guys all then. See everyone. Bye.